天上午6:30，晚上11点，与您准时相约。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry。 我们的节目有一个官方 QQ 群了， QQ 群的号码是3317640，大家可以加入这个 QQ 群跟我们进行互动。今天我们还是来聊一聊 TED Talk。 今天我们请到的老师是壮壮老师。
HelloAnd we're going to discuss something still related to education, but with a focus on teachers. 以前考过的这个托福也好，雅思也好，都考过这么一个题，就是 What are important qualities for good teachers?
Patience.
大家都会想到什么的，谈到 parents 也是第一条，就是耐心。
耐心，然后呢，warm-hearted, enthusiasm in this career, 你的热情。
对，我们之前也谈到了这个老师还要会鼓励小孩，对吧？从积极正面的角度，比如说你那个不及格，你不要用这样的措辞，你就说 not yet， 还没得到 A， 是吧？
嗯
啊，那今天的这一点呢，我觉得也挺重要的，就是 how to create magic，
怎么样能够去
创造一些
魔术。
对了，所以这个人讲话的话题是 teach teachers how to create magic，
teachers。
对，让老师去创造魔术。然后他首先呢提了一个问题， What do rap shows, barbershop banter and Sunday services have in common? 先看这个 rap shows， rap 是一种音乐，就有点像周杰伦那种
rap， hey hey hey、
对，
大学生英语在线
那就这种感觉哈，这是 rap shows。 还有一个呢，那个叫 barbershop banter， barbershop 是什么 shop 呀？
是理发的。
对，理发馆。 banter 呢？
banter
banter 就是笑话，所以就是一边理发的时候，一边人家就给你聊聊天啊，说点笑话啊。好，然后他说 What do A, B and C have in common? 三件事，第一件事 rap shows， 第二件事 barbershop banter， 第三件事 Sunday services。
Sunday services
这是指那个教堂的那个礼拜。好，他说这三件事 What do they have in common？这三件有什么共同点？
这三个到底有什么共同之处？
对，
我觉得他们都是由人去做的。
不错，还有呢？
而且呢，他们都是，
这个是都是用语言的，对不对？
嗯。
而且呢，他都是要说的比较精彩呢，还是比较 boring 呢？
要说的精彩一些，让别人去更好的听。
嗯哼，好，他现在呢，这个 speaker 呢就说了哈 ，They all hold the secret magic to enthrall and teach at the same time。
他们都是需要会懂魔术的。
对了，他有一个秘密的这么一个法宝神器来去 enthrall， enthrall 就是吸引。
怎么拼？我们来学习一下。
enthrall， enthrall，
enthrall， enthrall。
第二一个呢就是 teach， 所以他是要吸引并且教，也就是所谓的寓教于乐。那他说这三件事其实都是寓教于乐的。就这是一个技能，其实作为一个教育者，他其实是应该拥有这个 skill， 对吧？
嗯。
好，那如果说我再回到开始的问题，好的老师应该具备什么本领呢？
Humor。
对了，你就会想到了
A sense of humor
and the ability to enthrall and teach at the same time， 对不对？
嗯，
就是你要能够很吸引人的方式去寓教于乐，抓住这个听众，然后你再把你这个知识传授给他。所以这个人其实是讲求在课堂上教课的时候是需要活跃的。那我就想起来，现在就是好多培训机构，他其实就挺讲究这一点的，他就要求这个老师呢，其实他是一个表演者，他要能吸引学生。如果说学生都睡着了，您再教什么也完蛋了。
还真是，我自己就比较喜欢那种能够在课堂中讲讲笑话，表演一下，甚至还唱歌的老师。
对呀，因为你这个学习还是讲求这个效果，是吧？所以呢，这一段呢，就讲的是这件事儿。好，我们给大家放一下。
Right now, there is an aspiring teacher who is working on a 60-page paper based on some age-old education theory developed by some dead education professor.Wondering to herself what this task that she's engaging in has to do with what she wants to do with her life, which is be an educator, change lives, and spark magic. Right now, there is an aspiring teacher in a graduate school of education who's watching a professor babble on and on about engagement in the most disengaging way possible. Right now, there's a first-year teacher at home who is pouring through lesson plans, trying to make sense of standards, who's trying to make sense of how to grade students appropriately, while at the same time saying to herself over and over again, don't smile till November, because that's what she was taught in her teacher education program. Right now, there is a student who is coming up with a way to convince his mom or dad that he's very, very sick and can't make it to school tomorrow. On the other hand, right now, there are amazing educators that are sharing information that's shared in such a beautiful way that the students are sitting at the edge of their seats just waiting for a bead of sweat to drop off the face of this person so they can soak up all that knowledge. Right now, there is also a person who has an entire audience wrapped with attention. A person that's weaving a powerful narrative about a world that the people who are listening have never imagined or seen before. But if they close their eyes tightly enough, they can envision that world because the storytelling is so compelling. Right now, there's a person who can tell an audience to put their hands up in the air, and they will stay there till he says put them down. Right now. So people will then say, well, Chris, you describe the guy who's going through some awful training, but you're also describing these powerful educators. If you're thinking about the world of education or urban education in particular, these guys will probably cancel each other out and then we'll be okay. The reality is, the folks I described as the master teachers, the master narrative builders, the master storytellers are far removed from classrooms. The folks who know the skills about how to teach and engage an audience don't even know what teacher certification means. They may not even have the degrees to be able to have anything to call an education. And that to me is sad. It's sad because the people who I described that were very disinterested in the learning process want to be effective teachers, but they have no models. I'm going to paraphrase Mark Twain. Mark Twain says that proper preparation or teaching is so powerful that it can turn bad morals to good. It can turn awful practices into powerful ones. It can change men and transform them into angels. The folks who I described earlier got proper preparation in teaching, not in any college or university, but by virtue of just being in the same spaces as those who engage. Guess where those places are? Barbershops, rap concerts, and most importantly, in the black church. And I've been framing this idea called Pentecostal pedagogy. Who here has been to a black church? You got a couple of hands. To go to a black church, that preacher starts off and he realizes that he has to engage the audience. So he starts off with this sort of wordplay in the beginning oftentimes. And then he takes a pause and he says, oh my gosh, they're not quite paying attention. So he says, can I get an amen? Amen. So can I get an amen? Amen? And all of a sudden everybody's reawoken. That preacher bangs on the pulpit for attention. He drops his voice at a very, very low volume when he wants people to key into him. And those things are the skills that we need for the most engaging teachers. So why does teacher education only give you theory and tell you about standards and tell you about all these things that have nothing to do with the basic skills, that magic that you need to engage an audience, to engage a student? So I make the argument that we reframe teacher education. That we could focus on content, and that's fine. And we can focus on theories, and that's fine. But content and theories with the absence of the magic of teaching and learning means nothing. Now, people oftentimes say, well, magic is just magic. You know, there are teachers who, despite all their challenges, who had those skills, get into those schools, and they're able to engage an audience. And the administrator walks by and says, wow, he's so good. I wish all my teachers could be that good. And when they try to describe what that is, they just say he has that magic. But I'm here to tell you that magic can be taught. Magic can be taught. Magic can be taught. Now, how do you teach it? You teach it by allowing people to go into those spaces where the magic is happening. If you want to be an aspiring teacher in urban education, you got to leave the confines of that university and go into the hood. You got to go in there and hang out at the barbershop. You got to attend that black church. And you got to view those folks that have the power to engage and just take notes on what they do. In our teacher education classes in my university, I started a project where every single student that comes in there sits and watches rap concerts. They watch the way that the rappers move and talk with their hands. They study the way that he walks proudly across that stage. They listen to his metaphors and analogies, and they start learning these little things that if they practice enough, becomes the key to magic. They learn that if you just stare at a student and raise your eyebrow about a quarter of an inch, you don't have to say a word because they know that that means that you want more. And if it could transform teacher education to focus on teaching teachers how to create that magic, then we can make dead classes come alive. We can reignite imaginations and we can change education. Thank you.
大学生英语在线，欢迎您继续收听。
下面这一段也挺有意思的。下面这一段呢还是跟学习有关系。The topic is a science award that makes you laugh and then think. Science award 是一个科技的奖，对不对？ That makes you laugh and then think. 你觉得会是什么呢？这个挺好玩的。这个说话，对，说话的这个人这个 title 也有意思，叫做 science humorist。
科学幽默家。
哎，好玩吧？所以你看这个知识吧，像刚才咱们这一段说的，就是你要寓教于乐，同时这个科研也可以不那么枯燥，它和幽默还可以连在一起。他就说呢，这个 co-founder of LG Nobel Awards, this guy explores the world's most improbable research. In this thought-provoking and occasionally side-splitting talk, he tells stories.Of truly weird science and makes the case that silliness is critical to boost public interest in science. 这里边讲了几个词 ,thought-provoking talk, in this thought-provoking talk, 是启发人深思的这个讲话。还有一个是 side-splitting talk, 就是把那个边儿给撕了的。
哦，这什么意思呢？
这就是令人捧腹大笑的。然后他讲的这个 story, 这个 story 都是 weird science.
Weird science.我们知道 science 科学都是比较严谨甚至有些枯燥的。怎么有一些
怪了怪气的、
怎么会有一些怪了怪气的科学呢、
挺好玩的、是吧。然后他就说呢 silliness is critical to boost public interest in science. Silly.傻乎乎的是吧，他说这个东西呢其实对于吸引大众的对这个科技的兴趣是很重要的啊。待会儿呢我就给大家放之前他会提到这个其中一个例子，我觉得可能听得不太懂，他就会讲到有一个科学发明呢就是助产器，就是女人生孩子，他呢为了让这个生产过程呢简单一点呢，就是这个女生快要生的时候呢给她绑在一个大的圆转盘上，然后把这个转盘呢飞速的让它旋转起来，于是这个东西在转的时候就有什么心力和什么心力啊，离心力和向心力，对不对？结果呢他说这个女人生孩子的时候呢这个离心力就把那个孩子给甩出来了，就这么发明了一个仪器，还是 patented。
还有专利哈、
对，所以这就是那种 weird 的那个玩意儿，好玩吧？好，那我们就听一下这一段。
George and Charlotte Blonsky, who were a married couple living in the Bronx in New York City, invented something. They got a patent in 1965 for what they call a device to assist women in giving birth. This device consists of a large round table and some machinery.When the woman is ready to deliver her child, she lies on her back. She is strapped down to the table. And the table is rotated at high speed. The child comes flying out through centrifugal force. If you look at their patent carefully, especially if you have any engineering background or talent, you may decide that you see one or two points where the design is not perfectly adequate.Dr. Ivan Schwab in California is one of the people, one of the main people who helped answer the question, why don't woodpeckers get headaches? And it turns out the answer to that is because their brains are packaged inside their skulls in a way different from the way our brains, we being human beings, true, have our brains packaged. The woodpeckers...typically will peck, they will bang their head on a piece of wood thousands of times every day. Every day. And as far as anyone knows, that doesn't bother them in the slightest. How does this happen? Their brain does not slosh around like ours does. Their brain is packed in very tightly, at least for blows coming right from the front. Not too many people paid attention to this research until the last few years, when in this country especially, people are becoming curious about what happens to the brains of football players who bang their heads repeatedly. And the woodpecker maybe relates to that. There was a paper published in the medical journal The Lancet in England a few years ago called "A Man Who Pricked His Finger and Smelled Putrid for 5 Years." Dr. Caroline Mills and her team received this patient and didn't really know what to do about it. The man had cut his finger. He worked processing chickens. And then he started to smell really, really bad. So bad that when he got in a room with the doctors and the nurses, they couldn't stand being in the room with him. It was intolerable. They tried every drug, every other treatment they could think of. After a year, he still smelled putrid. After 2 years, still smelled putrid. 3 years, 4 years, it still smelled putrid. After 5 years, it went away on its own. It's a mystery. In New Zealand, Dr. Leanne Parkin and her team tested an old tradition in her city. They live in a city that has huge hills, San Francisco grade hills. And in the winter there, it gets very cold and very icy. There are lots of injuries. The tradition that they tested by asking people who were on their way to work in the morning to stop and try something out, try one of two conditions. The tradition is that in the winter in that city, you wear your socks on the outside of your boots. And what they discovered by experiment, and it was quite graphic when they saw it, was that it's true that if you wear your socks on the outside rather than the inside, you're much more likely to survive and not slip and fall. Now, I hope you will agree with me that these things I've just described to you, each of them deserves some kind of prize. And that's what they got. Each of them got an Ig Nobel Prize. In 1991, I, together with a bunch of other people, started the Ig Nobel Prize ceremony. Every year we give out 10 prizes. The prizes are based on just one criteria. Just one criteria. It's very simple. It's that you've done something that makes people laugh and then think. What you've done makes people laugh and then think. Whatever it is, there's something about it that when people encounter it at first, their only possible reaction is to laugh. And then a week later, it's still rattling around in their heads, and all they want to do is tell their friends about it. That's the quality we look for. Every year, we get in the neighborhood of 9,000 new nominations for the Ig Nobel Prize. Of those, consistently between 10% and 20% of those nominations are people who nominate themselves. Those self-nominees almost never win. It's very difficult numerically to win a prize if you want to. Even if you don't want to, it's very difficult numerically. You should know that when we choose somebody to win an Ig Nobel Prize, we get in touch with that person very quietly. We offer them the chance to decline this great honor if they want to. Happily for us, almost everyone who's accepted a prize decides to accept. What do you get if you win an Ig Nobel Prize? Well, you get several things. You get an Ig Nobel Prize. The design is different every year. These are always handmade from extremely cheap materials. You're looking at a picture of the prize we gave last year, 2013. Most prizes in the world also give their winners some cash, some money. We don't have any money, so we can't give them. In fact, the winners have to pay their own way to come to the Ig Nobel ceremony, which most of them do. Last year, though, we did manage to scrape up some money. Last year, each of the 10 Ig Nobel Prize winners received from us $10 trillion, a $10 trillion bill from Zimbabwe. You may remember that Zimbabwe had a little adventure for a few years there of inflation. They ended up printing bills that were in denominations as large as $100 trillion. The man responsible, who runs the National Bank there, by the way, won an Ig Nobel Prize in mathematics. The other thing you win is an invitation to come to the ceremony, which happens at Harvard University. And when you get there, you come to Harvard's biggest meeting place and classroom, fits 1,100 people, it's jammed to the gills, and up on the stage, waiting to shake your hand, waiting to hand you your Ig Nobel Prize, are a bunch of Nobel Prize winners. That's the heart of the ceremony. The winners are kept secret until that moment. Even the Nobel laureates who will shake their hand don't know who they are until they're announced. I'm going to tell you about just a very few of the other medical-related prizes we've given. Keep in mind, we've given 230 prizes. There are lots of these people who walk among you. Maybe you have one. A paper was published about 30 years ago called Injuries Due to Falling Coconuts. It was written by Dr. Peter Bars, who is Canadian. Dr. Bars came to the ceremony and explained that as a young doctor, he wanted to see the world. So he went to Papua New Guinea. When he got there, he went to work in a hospital, and he was curious what kinds of things happen to people that bring them to the hospital. He looked through the records, and he discovered that a surprisingly large number of people in that hospital were there because of injuries due to falling coconuts. One typical thing that happens is people will come from the highlands where there are not many coconut trees down to visit their relatives on the coast where there are lots. And they'll think that a coconut tree is a fine place to stand and maybe lie down. A coconut tree that is 90 feet tall and has coconuts that weigh 2 pounds that can drop off at any time. A team of doctors in Europe published a series of papers about colonoscopies. You're all familiar with colonoscopies one way or another, or in some cases one way and another. They, in these papers, explain to their fellow doctors who perform colonoscopies how to minimize the chance that when you perform a colonoscopy, your patient will explode. Dr. Emmanuel Bensoussan, one of the authors, flew in from Paris to the ceremony, where he explained the history of this, that in the 1950s, when colonoscopies were becoming a common technique, for the first time, people were figuring out how to do it well. And there were some difficulties at first. The basic problem I'm sure you're familiar with, that you're looking inside a long, narrow, dark place. And so you want to have a larger space. You add some gas to inflate it so you have room to look around. Now that's added to the gas, the methane gas that's already inside. The gas that they used at first, in many cases, was oxygen. So they added oxygen to methane gas, and then they wanted to be able to see. They needed light, so they put in a light source, which in the 1950s was very hot. So you had methane gas, which is flammable, oxygen, and heat. They stopped using oxygen pretty quickly. Now, it's rare that patients will explode, but it does still happen. The final thing that I want to tell you about is a prize gave to Dr. Elena Bodnar. Dr. Elena Bodnar invented a brassiere that, in an emergency, can be quickly separated into a pair of protective face masks, one to save your life, one to save the life of some lucky bystander. Why would someone do this, you might wonder. Dr. Bodnar came to the ceremony, and she explained that she grew up in Ukraine. She was one of the doctors who treated victims of the Chernobyl power plant meltdown. And they later discovered that a lot of the worst medical problems came from the particles people breathed in. So she was always thinking after that about, could there be some simple mask that was available everywhere when the unexpected happens. Years later, she moved to America. She had a baby. One day she looked, and on the floor, her infant son had picked up her bra and had her bra on his face, and that's where the idea came from. She came to the Ig Nobel ceremony with the first prototype of the bra, and she demonstrated. I myself own an emergency bra. It's my favorite bra, but I would be happy to share it with any of you should the need arise. Thank you.
好，总结一下吧。今天咱们来了两段，对吧？还记得吗？那个 Larry 第一段是什么来着呢？
第一段是寓教于乐。
然后第二段呢，我们就讲的是
Science Humorist。
对了，所以说这个科学呢，你说就必须是得是那种特严肃的、正儿八经的那样的吗？其实也未必啊。
哎，真是啊。
嗯。
好的，那希望今天的话题对大家有所帮助和启发。感谢大家的收听，也谢谢壮壮老师的陪伴。我们下期节目再见。
再见。
Saw you from